Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
The month of December is going to be a wild ride around the Georgia football program. We know that for a fact. It's Rose Bowl at the end of the month. It's early signing period coming up in just a few weeks. And somehow, some way, Kirby Smart's got to sort of lead Georgia in the direction of both of those goals and accomplish both of those things here over the course of the next few weeks. Now, luckily for him, he worked at a program for a long time, Alabama, that was pretty good at doing just that, and the expertise that Smart gained then, he brings to Athens with him now. As an example of just how much Alabama has sort of managed recruiting while also winning championships, well, you really don't have to look all that much farther back than just this Sunday, when Nick Saban was interviewed by ESPN after finding out that his team had been in the college football playoff. And much the same way a lot of Tide fans may have been sitting in front of the TV, biting their fingernails, wondering if they were going to make it, Nick Saban wasn't doing any of that kind of stuff. Here is how he explained he heard that his team was going to the college football playoff. Take a listen to this.
Well, I really hate to admit that we had recruits in for official visits this weekend, and I was actually bringing one of those recruits to my office. So I was in the car and kind of missed it. So when I got here, everybody was waiting for me, and it was really exciting, and we're very pleased and proud and happy. And sorry I missed you guys, but we found out another way.
I play that clip for two reasons. A, for what I said a moment ago, it really is an illustration of how you have to have two minds at the same time. One geared towards the playoff, one geared towards early signing period, which begins December 20th. But also, what Saban says there is actually relevant to Georgia fans for a different reason. Because when Saban says he was recruiting when he found out that Alabama was in the college football playoff, we now have some information that lets us know who it was that Nick Saban may have been recruiting, and it is a name of interest to UGA fans. Chris Kirstner, who works with Hannah Chalker on our SEC Country Alabama recruiting show, was on Facebook Live last night, and he was divulging some information about this. Just who it was that Saban was spending time with when the Alabama playoff announcement came down? Well, it was a guy that Georgia fans would really like to see a part of its 2018 class, the defensive end from Stockbridge, Georgia, Brenton Cox. Here's what Chris Kirstner said about it.
Brenton Cox, 5-star Ohio State defensive end, was in Tuscaloosa this past weekend for an official visit, one of Alabama's top overall targets. I was told that out of all the official visitors this past weekend, there were four of them. Nick Saban spent the most time with Cox. Alabama needs defensive linemen, linebackers. He's one of those hybrid guys who could play both. Alabama's recruiting him as a jack linebacker. So I was told that Brenton Cox was that visitor with Nick Saban.
And as Jeff Sintel explained the other day, that it's Georgia that's also right now looking at him as an outside linebacker as well, even though the recruiting service will sort of list him as a strong side defensive end. And from a size standpoint, almost looks like he could be one of those 3-4 defensive ends. It sounds like Georgia and Alabama here recruiting Brenton Cox as an outside linebacker, including Saban with the personal touch of spending that one-on-one time with him on Saturday. Of course, Cox right now is an Ohio State commit. Remember, he committed to the Buckeyes well back in the offseason, back in a time when Georgia did not have a lot of recruiting momentum. That has changed for Georgia as of late, and it seems like Cox has certainly been open to the idea of making a flip, including taking the recent unofficial visit to Georgia. But according to what Chris Kirstner said on the Facebook Live broadcast last night, he thinks that being with Saban when the announcement came in could hold a lot of weight with Brenton Cox when he ultimately makes his decision. Here's a little more from Chris Kirstner.
In my opinion, if you're a recruit with Nick Saban as the football rankings come out and Alabama gets the spot and Ohio State doesn't and you're committed to Ohio State, in my opinion, it's hard to not commit to Alabama at that point just because you're sitting with Nick Saban. He gets the news at the same time as you. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Cox.
So that's a pretty strong suggestion there from Chris Kirstner that being with Saban on the weekend is going to have an impact on his decision. And if Brenton Cox does flip away from Ohio State, a lot of people think he will, that he'd flip towards Alabama, not towards Georgia. We're going to hear from Jeff Sintel about this subject in just a moment. We'll let Jeff tell us what he thinks about the Brenton Cox situation and the impact of that visit to Alabama. Of course, he does at least supposedly have an official visit scheduled to Georgia coming up here in just a few days. So we'll get the latest on this from Jeff Sintel in a moment. But for the people who maybe don't follow recruiting very, very closely on a daily basis, here's the reason why names like Brenton Cox are so important to the Dogs at the moment. It goes back to what Kirby Smart has sort of viewed from his team all season long. What Brenton Cox does well contribute to a pass rush and help get to the quarterback. That's the element that championship defenses always seem to have, and that's element this year that Kirby Smart thinks for Georgia has been at times good and maybe at times maybe not quite good enough. Here is Kirby Smart from early in the season to sort of lay the groundwork for why names like Bretton Cox are so important to the Dogs.
That's one of the big things we've tried to improve. So you can improve your pass rush by bringing more guys, or you can rush four better. And obviously I like to rush four better than bring in more guys. So we've tried to find ways to do it, but it's not always been exactly what we wanted, what we want to create, but it's certainly improving.
So Kirby Smart says he likes to rush four guys as opposed to having to send a bunch of blitzes, and that's what most of the best SEC teams are going to do. You know, a lot of blitzing makes your defensive secondary vulnerable, so it's just a simple strategic advantage if you can only rush four and get to the quarterback. But to rush four better, to use Kirby Smart's phrase, sometimes you have to have a better four contributing to your pass rush. In a lot of ways, that's what the 2018 class for the Georgia Bulldogs is going to be about. Aziz Ojulari is a step in that direction. Adam Anderson is a step in that direction. Guys like KJ Henry would be a step in that direction, and so would Bretton Cox as well. But when you're talking about the elite pass rushers in the country, you're also talking about intense competition to bring them in. I believe that Georgia would really like to get Bretton Cox. I think the Dogs have a really good chance at securing that commitment. But it's a head-to-head battle with Alabama and a one-on-one showdown with Nick Saban, who spent a lot of his personal time this past weekend paying attention to Bretton Cox. It sets the stage for a big-time battle moving towards the signing decision for a lot of these players. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us. Whether you watch us on video each and every morning at 10 a.m. on the Dog Nation Facebook page, listen to us on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, or check us out in podcast form anywhere podcasts are found, iTunes, SoundCloud. We post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com. We try to make it easy for you to find. And, of course, this week we're continuing to say thank you for being a part of our Dog Nation invasion to Atlanta this past Saturday. By the way, wink, wink, nod, nod. That may not be the final Dog Nation invasion to Atlanta this season. Of course, you know it has to happen for that to take place, but stay tuned for more details on that. But we had a great time in Atlanta, the shadow of Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Saturday. A lot of fun, of course. Would not be possible without our sponsors, including our friends over at ATL Now. A new ATL starts now. ATL Next is Hartsfield-Jackson's next development program that consists of a series of projects over the next 20 years. Learn more about roadway impacts and nightly closures at next.atl.com. So thank you to ATL Next for being a part of our Dog Nation invasion. We appreciate a really, really good time this past Saturday, and we hope to see another one coming up in the month of January as well. As I promised, we will get Jeff Sintel here in just a few moments to talk more about the recruiting situation for Bretton Cox and kind of everybody else. A lot of big names to bring up with Jeff today, and some of these are names we actually haven't mentioned in a while. We will do some of that in a moment. I also want to take care of one more piece of business here very quickly. I alluded to this at the end of last week, and I want to be clear about this right now. We're going to have to push pause on our Own the East t-shirt giveaway. We've got some more Own the East t-shirts, and we're going to have to push pause on it right now, A, because I think a lot of y'all are excited about owning more than just the East right now. You're excited about the SEC championship and a move towards the college football playoff and maybe even, you know, Dog Nation domination of the national championship and everything else. So we're going to push pause on that for that reason, and also because I got to catch my breath here and start sending out some of the t-shirts for the guys and gals who have won. They've been reaching out to me saying, where's my t-shirt? Your t-shirt is on the way. We're going to get this taken care of, but I need to hold off on giving away any more t-shirts in order to be able to pass out the ones that I have given. By the way, speaking of t-shirts, sounds like based on some of the meetings I've had with some of my bosses, we may be able to print some more kind of fun, exciting t-shirts here coming up pretty soon. I'll be able to tell you more about that when the time comes. For now, though, let me transition back to the Rose Bowl. And, you know, one of the things that's dominated the conversation for me with a lot of my friends and people that I work with, and not just people in the media business, but just, you know, Georgia fans excited about making the trip out to Pasadena, is just how challenging it is to find those travel accommodations right now. Hotels hard to come by, airfare hard to come by. And it's really a carbon copy of a lot of what we saw leading into the Notre Dame game back in the month of September, that Dog Nation is just going to travel. And whether it's an official Dog Nation invasion or not, Dog Nation is invading California coming up for the January 1st showdown against the Oklahoma Sooners. And it's not just people like me here doing Dog Nation Daily that have noticed that. I thought that Kirk Herbstreit, the ESPN broadcaster, had a great message for Oklahoma fans about this. And he's clearly noticed what all of y'all have been doing all season long. Kirk Herbstreit tweets out, if you're out watching on video, you can obviously see it. If not, I'll read it to you. By the way, hearing from the folks at the Rose Bowl that the Georgia fans are coming in full force. Oklahoma fans better be considering the trip to avoid the, quote, road game atmosphere. UGA fans will travel anywhere in masses. And, boy, it's kind of nice to see Herb Street noticing that, because it is the performance that the fans have been putting forth all season long, taking over these stadiums. Notre Dame game at the start of the game, by most of the other road trips this season, by the end of the game, that was the case. Georgia fans out in full force. And, of course, at the Notre Dame game, I mean, I think there's some reason to believe that it had an impact on the final score and an impact on Georgia's ability to win. Let's go back in time for a moment to a time when Kirby Smart, when he had a chance to speak right after the game, one of the first thoughts he wanted to mention was a thank you to all the fans who had traveled to South Bend. Here was Kirby then.
You know, this atmosphere tonight was incredible. I thought for college football, you think about our players and our fan base. This will be a game they've talked about for a long time, a special trip for our players to end it the right way and for our fan base to come out. You know, I want to say thanks to the fans because they were really behind us and backed us, and I thought it was a big momentum swing in the game.
And then Kirby Smart went into some more detail about one specific way that so many Georgia fans may have helped against the Fighting Irish. Is this a sort of foreshadowing of what could happen in Pasadena? Here's Kirby.
I'll tell you what I'm proud of. I'm proud of our fans. I'm proud of the fact they came out and tons of them were here. The video shots I saw from Chicago before the game and the takeover when we got here, you know, that played a role in this game. That we never felt like it was so much of a road game. I mean, there was time our quarterback was able to go on his own cadence, which you don't usually get to do on the road. Definitely don't get to do on the road in the SEC. Fan base don't let you do that. We were able to go on ours, and I think a lot of it had to do with the red and black that was in the stadium.
And what Kirk Herbstreit said on Twitter yesterday was to Oklahoma fans, you better be careful that this does not happen again, because this is what the Georgia fans are planning to do in Pasadena, California for, oh yeah, by the way, a national semifinal in the Rose Bowl. And obviously my evidence on this is just anecdotal, but I've heard from 2, 3, 4 dozen people who are absolutely making very specific plans to get there. They're running into airfare difficulties. They're running into hotel difficulties, but they are not swayed. They are not discouraged from trying. The idea of there being, you know, tens upon tens and tens of thousands of Georgia fans, that certainly seems more likely than not right now. We'll do our best here on Dog Nation Daily to kind of keep you up to date on all the travel plans as they're kind of coming together and who's having success and what's working for some people. We'll try to help you on that as much as we can. But listen, right now we're all in the same boat as everybody else, just trying to figure out how we're going to get out there. So kind of an interesting thought from Kirk Herbstreit and an interesting way to kind of anticipate what's going to happen on January 1st when the Dogs and the Sooners get together. Before I bring in Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily today, let me also deal with one other piece of news. Now that Scott Roussel from Football Scoop yesterday, footballscoop.com, a website that sort of carved out a niche for itself and kind of covering the silly season, coaching change. That's their industry, essentially. They get really, really busy this time of year looking at who's going to fill some of these open jobs. We know that for a while now, the Tennessee job's been open. The new athletic director is Philip Fulmer, and according to Roussel at Football Scoop, Philip Fulmer has kind of put his list together. Let me read here from Scott Roussel from footballscoop.com. He says that Philip Fulmer has meetings or has spoken with Georgia defensive coordinator Mel Tucker, Auburn defensive coordinator Kevin Steele, Clemson defensive coordinator Brent Venables, Southern Miss Methodist coach Chad Morris, and former LSU head coach Les Miles. So if you read that, you come away with the idea that it sounds like Georgia defensive coordinator Mel Tucker is a finalist for the Tennessee job. Now, obviously, I'm going to get some thoughts from this on from Jeff Sintel in just a couple of minutes, and we'll have Seth Emerson a little bit later on the week. We'll sort of find out from them what their sources and what their reporting are kind of leading us to believe here about what role that Tucker could play in the Tennessee coaching search. All I can give you right now is my opinion. And my opinion is that while Mel Tucker is going to be a head coach at some point in time in the near future in college football, I think that's a stated goal for him, and I think he'd be a really good head coach. I don't believe that he's truly going to get the Tennessee job here right now. And I think even he probably knows that. I think that if you look at those five names that were mentioned, there's one of those names that sort of stands out, you know, far above the rest in terms of, I shouldn't say above, but sort of outside the rest in terms of just a different kind of candidate. We hear current defensive coordinator. We hear former head coach. The current head coach that we see on that list is Chad Morris, a guy that's former Clemson offensive coordinator, doing a pretty good job at SMU. My guess is, based on those five names, that the true target there is Chad Morris, who's also thought to be one of the potential finalists for the Arkansas job as well. So I believe that you've got to give yourself multiple candidates. Otherwise, you don't have enough leverage in negotiations with the guy that you really want. But if those are the five names, I mean, we know for a fact, based on what the Baton Rouge Advocate reported, that Les Miles is not getting serious consideration here, even though his name shows up right there. I'm going to trust what the Advocate's reporting about Les Miles, a name that they obviously know pretty well. So that's at least one of those names. It's probably sort of like packing peanuts, just sort of meant to protect the real name. And in this case, I believe the real name is not Mel Tucker. I believe it's Chad Morris, but I've been wrong before. We'll see if I'm wrong on this, and we'll follow this story all, you know, for the next few weeks, because obviously Tucker is a guy that will be a head coach at some point in time. I don't know that it's quite ready to happen over the course of this offseason. That's my thoughts on that. We'll talk a lot about the Rose Bowl throughout the rest of the show, and including kind of an interesting dilemma here, legal issue facing a Oklahoma star player. We'll tell you about that before we're done here today on Dog Nation Daily. But for now, put our attention back on recruiting, getting ready for the early signing period, beginning really in just a couple of weeks. What's the latest in all the big names? Let's find out as we welcome in Jeff Sintel to Dog Nation Daily. Great to have you with us as well.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And let me say hello to Jeff Sintel, who I'm assuming has pulled himself off the scrum at the bottom of the field there at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. He was in the locker room. He was on the field. He was really everywhere that Georgia was on Saturday night. And, Jeff, I trust that you found your way back home at a certain point in time, or are you still joining us from the bowels of Mercedes-Benz Stadium?
The belly of the Benz. That's a clever turn of the phrase, Matt, right there, my man. Yeah, I think the snow angels and the blue and gold confetti have since subsided, especially since they had a Falcons game to play there yesterday. But that was a moment, Brandon. I think a lot of folks that were in that stadium, you're going to start combining these moments now. You've got the Notre Dame moment. You've got the Jacksonville moment. You've got the Benz moment and that blaring horn every time Georgia scored. Now there's a Rose Bowl moment. 2017 has been awfully good to Georgia, especially when you think about that recruiting class that put together a lot of foundations for that SEC title.
Yeah, Jeff, that's certainly well said. And I actually want to talk to you in just a moment about what some of these recruits had to say about Georgia winning the SEC championship. Before that, let me bring you into a discussion we were having before you joined us, and that is involving Brenton Cox. You know that he's a player that I'm a fan of. That's a guy that I've been hoping Georgia would have a chance to flip from Ohio State, of course, the great player on the Stockbridge team this season. And I thought that Chris Kirshner on the Alabama Facebook page last night, or the Alabama SEC Country Facebook page, talked about how he believed that Brenton Cox was the person that was with Nick Saban when Saban found out that he was going to be in the college football playoff, that Saban was giving a lot of individual attention to Brenton Cox this past weekend on Brenton's visit there to Tuscaloosa. How much does the individual involvement of Saban impact Brenton Cox if he does flip from Ohio State? Does Alabama kind of elbow its way in here with Georgia, or what would you say is the latest on Brenton Cox?
Well, I remember had a one-on-one interview with Brenton after his last high school game, and it was almost like Brandon and I had to remember and remind him that Alabama was in the conversation at times with Ohio State and Georgia, but then he did put them in there. He says his three are Ohio State, Georgia, and Alabama, but there's something to consider here now with Georgia. As we said before, and I've written on the Intel blog, he thinks he can get to Sundays through Georgia, just like he can at Ohio State. And now when he looks at Georgia, very close to home, lots of friends and family there, very comfortable with the roster there. And then he looks to Ohio State and he looks to Georgia, along with that Crimson Tide and all those Nick Saban headlines. You're talking about three programs that are now sitting at the same table in college football. Georgia's not looking up to those guys. They're looking shoulder to shoulder with those guys.
No, I think that's a great point, Jeff, that because of the success that Georgia's enjoyed recently, that it's no longer taking a backseat to programs like Alabama and Ohio State. I guess one real quick follow-up on this, if you don't mind, though, is when you say in your one-on-one interview that he didn't speak all that enthusiastically about Alabama, but now another reporter is saying he is enthusiastic about Alabama. Is this a situation a little bit like what Aubrey Solomon had going on last year where, you know, when Brenton Cox took the Georgia visit, he was all Georgia. Maybe after the Alabama visit, he's enthusiastic about Alabama again. If he gets back to, you know, Columbus here in the next couple of weeks, is that going to change there as well? Is this a young man that's easily swayed? I'm not judging him if he is. I'd probably be easily swayed here in this, you know, in this type of situation as well. Is that one of the things that's going on here, that whoever bats last has the best opportunity with Brenton Cox?
Well, I think one of the mantras that I pepper around this show a lot is follow the visits. Georgia, it seems, will get maybe the last visit, because I think his official visit to Ohio State is on December the 11th. Georgia's currently trending to be right around that December 15th, that final official visit weekend. And side note, that's going to be a ginormous weekend with a lot of five stars and a lot of key prospects there. But, you know, I always trust, when I say trust follow the visit, I kind of don't trust interviews right after a visit. There's the visit love. There's the visit high. I don't expect many recruits, especially five stars like Brenton, combined with a trip to Alabama, they're expected to say nice things. They're expected to gush, and they're expected to enjoy the trip. I kind of put more stock in an interview that takes place maybe outside of the boundaries of a recent visit. I do think those are the three schools for Brenton, a five-star. Everybody will notice that Georgia just picked up a five-star yesterday, sort of. Rivals made Adam Anderson a five-star prospect.
That's right.
And then the composite kind of aligned shortly thereafter. So Adam Anderson would be a five-star defensive end pass rusher for Georgia, and Brenton Cox would surely be one of those dudes. 6'5", about 255. Would also play right away in the big boy SEC. He's a recruit folks should really start thinking about and also start wondering about, because he would be a huge play for Georgia.
Let me go back to the SEC championship for a moment, because one of the things you've been doing on the last couple of days, and I think it's a lot of fun, is collecting a lot of these comments from recruits, both commits, priority recruits, maybe even, you know, sort of long range 2019, 2020, even in one case, I guess maybe even a 2021 recruit. You've been hearing from a lot of these guys. What is the consensus theme that you're hearing from how recruits are viewing what Georgia was able to do on Saturday night, and by the way, subsequently on Sunday, punching a ticket for the college football playoff?
Yeah, it ranged a lot of places. I think some of the most interesting ones were maybe from 2020 prospects. There was a cornerback in Virginia who's currently rated as the nation's number one corner for that class, who said it was kind of unique to see another team win the SEC. It really impressed him that Georgia could do that. Now, of course, you would see gushing remarks from some of Georgia commits. Aaron Brule was the guy that after Georgia had locked it down, he announced on Twitter that he's going to sign on December the 20th. There had been some indecision there, a little bit of worry about, or a caution light for Georgia fans to worry about with home state LSU there. But Brule now sounds like he's ready to become a Bulldog, and he is happy to become a Bulldog and proud to become a Bulldog. I thought maybe one of the most interesting was Georgia tight end commitment, John Fitzpatrick, that said Georgia is back for good. Lots of really wow moments. I remember collecting a comment last night from Dante Walker at Riverdale, who's a big target for Georgia in 2019, and he used the word wow in capital letters. Just a lot of guys are looking at Georgia now in a different light, and I guess that's sort of like, I don't know, maybe new money or a lottery windfall or whatever, but everybody's looking at the Bulldogs in year two with Kirby, and now as there's all the proof in that pudding that this is a program that's not just trading on potential anymore, trading on production.
And specifically on a name like Jamari Sawyer, who you also wrote about at DogNation.com, and you kind of foreshadowed what I'm about to ask you a moment ago when you said, hey, if it's Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia for Brenton Cox, Georgia doesn't take a back seat to those teams anymore because Georgia's in the college football playoff. This is also specifically true, I think, for the Jamari Sawyer sort of side-by-side comparison between Georgia and Clemson. And there was maybe at one point in time among some Georgia fans a worry that Clemson just had too much pizzazz, too much excitement. It's in the playoff. It's a, you know, kind of a fun-loving coach. They're having a good time there. They're going to Sugar Bowls like they're about to do against Alabama. Well, all of a sudden, if Jamari Sawyer was swayed by the out-of-state program because he was having a bunch of fun, making great bowl trips and hoisting national championship trophies, once again, for Sawyer, who's taken a million visits to Georgia, maybe Georgia's championship success and opportunity for national championship success, maybe that's also sort of that final box for a guy like that to check off that these out-of-state programs can't sell something anymore that Georgia doesn't have, to use a double negative, that Georgia's got the same stuff they do in terms of championship opportunities.
Well said right there, Brandon. I mean, Georgia playing in a Rose Bowl, with the SEC banner across its chest. They've already been rated number one this year. They've went to big places like Notre Dame, Jacksonville, basically woke up the echoes or exercised a lot of demons. This program, you got to say it, and it's not in any way overselling it here. Georgia just has a lot of momentum on the trail, and it kind of fuels the narrative that Georgia might be into it with players that maybe they weren't into it maybe a month ago.
All right, let me ask you about Mel Tucker for a moment. Football Scoop had the report that he's a potential, I guess, they didn't use the word finalist, but they enlisted five names. Those seem like finalists for Tennessee. This, for me, feels like a bit of a swerve on Tennessee's part. I believe that Tucker will be a head coach at some point. I think he'd be a good one. I don't think that Tucker's going to Tennessee this offseason. That's not a report. That's my opinion. But would you agree with my opinion on that based on what you think you may be hearing?
Yeah, I think the timing is just not right there for that, especially. Why would you take the Tennessee job and want to compete with all the other big boys in the SEC when you basically would have 2 weeks to recruit, maybe 2 weekends to recruit if you took the job right now, especially before the early signing period? You're not going to be able to get a lot of main course players, a lot of four- or five-star players. I think this is another offset, Brandon, of rich program problems again. Georgia's at the point now where it's almost going to be a scratch-your-head type thing if Georgia and its coordinators and its top assistants and its top recruiters are not being courted by the other programs and the have-nots or want-somes of college football. This is the thing that happens with all the top five schools and the schools that are playing in the playoffs. Happens to Alabama over and over. Their coordinators are courted by schools that want some of that Alabama success and now that Georgia success.
I believe that you reported, to shift gears here, that, and I hope I pronounced his name correctly, Devad Wilson, the four-star cornerback who was a commitment to Florida, recently decommitted. I believe you reported that he's taking an official visit to Georgia this weekend. How real is this for Georgia? And I want an elite defensive back to be added into this recruiting class. How real is Wilson here if maybe the ship is sailing with a Tyson Campbell, someone like that? Is Georgia seriously involved here in Wilson, who just decommitted from Florida?
Brandon, I don't think the ship's sailing with Tyson Campbell at all.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Tyson Campbell's ship is not going to sail. It's not going to leave that port down in South Florida until February the 7th. That guy's not going to make his decision until then. It's going to go till after the All-American games. I think what Georgia's just doing there is just really good recruiting. Also, it's kind of an offset of what's happening there at Florida with the Dan Mullen hire and maybe position fits and maybe not being a type of guy that Grantham wants or Grantham wanting someone else. I think it's just making sure. Now, Devad Wilson has liked Georgia for quite some time. His social media has been pro-Georgia at times. He's also really good friends with a lot of the South Florida guys like Rashad Wildgoose and James Cook. He's planning to take his official visit to Georgia this weekend along with Trey Hill and also along with, another really – big guy to consider for the class of 2018.
Let me do a couple questions here on some of these Tennessee recruiting targets that have an overlap with Georgia. We now know that Philip Fulmer is Tennessee AD. We don't know who the coach is going to be, but we know that Fulmer's the AD. Will that cause a guy like Cade Mays, and maybe even more broadly, will that cause Cade Mays' family, obviously strong connection to the Tennessee program and the city of Knoxville, are they going to be forced to have to pay a little more attention to Tennessee here because Fulmer's back in charge?
I think they'll give them the respect, but I don't think you can pay any attention to Tennessee right now, Brandon, until they have a head coach and they know who the offensive line coach is. Tennessee hasn't even bellied up to the table to make a bet yet in the race for Cade Mays, and I don't think Tennessee, while there will be a sentimental favorite and they're going to have their shot provided they hire a coach before Cade Mays decides on December the 20th. But you remember that top three edit came out last week for Cade Mays. I didn't see a big power T there at all. I saw Ohio State, I saw Clemson, and yeah. I saw Georgia.
Good point. Good point. The same thing with Alante Taylor, who I guess is saying that his final three is Georgia, Louisville, and Tennessee. Should we eliminate Tennessee and assume it's Georgia, Louisville for the four-star athlete, Taylor?
I just don't think – I mean, the young man's not going to eliminate them. He has Louisville, Georgia, and Tennessee as his final three at this time. He moved on from Wake Forest. He had a cousin that played at Wake Forest, but according to a report, Wake Forest does not have the ability for Alante Taylor to enroll early, which is kind of mind-boggling to me, considering that Alante Taylor would instantly become one of the best athletes on the Demon Deacon squad. If there's no room for him at Wake Forest, somehow, again, mind-boggling that Georgia will find room for them when they're playing for BCS and they're playing for national championships in January.
Yeah.
But Georgia would make room for him. They would love him at receiver, kick returner, or cornerback, or safety. But the schools there to watch right now are Georgia, Louisville, and Tennessee. I think Tennessee may have some moves if they retain Kevin Beard as the wide receivers coach there. That situation right there is still looking pretty good for Georgia at this time, because Tennessee doesn't even have a head coach, and I don't know how any staff or how any players, any legit elite players that have great options on their among their pecking order, I don't know how they can really consider Tennessee seriously right now, other than to kind of keep them on the down low and keep the home fire burning just a little bit.
And that brings me to like the last Tennessee name I wanted to ask about, and that's Trey Dean, the safety from Dutchtown. And I don't mind telling you, Jeff, there's plenty I don't know, but the recruitment I've probably understood less this entire 2018 cycle may be that of Trey Dean. Quay Walker down there in Crisp County may be a close second, but Trey Dean has just been confusing to me. You know, when he back during the summer when he didn't go to Texas, everybody thought he was going to Georgia. Then he came back and sort of out of nowhere committed to Tennessee. And you know, some people thought, well, maybe you know his sort of stock may be falling in some recruiting circles. But now he's getting a lot of chatter out there on the internet, maybe even Alabama back involved here on Trey Dean, I guess I've sort of read on some of the message boards and things like that. What is going on here with Trey Dean, and is that a guy that Georgia has any involvement with at this point?
Well, that's the guy that's just in the class, Brandon. I want all the viewers and listeners out there to be clear about this one point. Georgia has 18 public commitments. I think the class is much smaller than that in reality. Six names. There could be some shuffling amongst those 18 public commitments, but you start talking about names like Luke Floyd, Alante Taylor, Cade Mays, Jamari Sawyer, Trey Hill, Tyson Campbell, Isaac Taylor Stewart. I mean, that's a lot of names, and the math doesn't really commute. Christian Barmore. There's a lot of guys right there that are up for those six slots. And I just don't think Gilbert Frierson, Devon Wilson, I just don't know where Trey Dean, guys like Trey Dean and J.C. Horn fit in. Mm-hmm. And they've been to Georgia a couple of times, but they've never been consistently recruited as a priority by Georgia.
Last question for you. And, yeah, I mean, that's obviously the tough challenge. I mean, it's great to see Georgia growing as a program to the point where, you know, it's got more opportunities than it has recruiting spots, but there's obviously a lot of folks in the Atlanta area and the state of Georgia that like Dean, and these are just sort of the tough decisions you have to make from time to time when you've got more good recruits and more good recruiting opportunities than you have scholarship spots available. But the last guy I want to ask you about, and it's kind of interesting when you just rattled off a lot of potential candidates, you didn't mention his name, but he is a guy that, you know, once again, I'd like to see Georgia get, although I'll admit that my wish list is about 75 names long. But nonetheless, Robert Cooper currently a commitment to Florida State, and Florida State doesn't have a coach right now. How much will the Florida State coaching hire impact what Robert Cooper does? If it's a Willie Taggart who's strongly rumored to be coming over from Oregon, does that help them get Robert Cooper? Is Georgia still working on Cooper given the fact that it's got some other options here at defensive tackle? I mean, what would you say the Cooper situation looks like at the moment?
I think Cooper is going to check with me in January. I think Alabama, Florida State, and Georgia are still probably going to be the contenders for him there. If I left his name off right there, I just didn't see him as a hot-button guy in December to think about right there.
Sure thing.
Still in the class. I don't want anybody to start thinking, oh, there goes Cooper. Jeff didn't mention Cooper. I think Cooper's the guy that's going to think about Georgia and all of his options in January. I think the fact that Florida State doesn't have a coach, even though we're hearing – whispers of Willie Taggart there off and on at times. I think Cooper's the guy that's going to think about his choice in January, make his decision on the old school signing day. He's definitely a guy in the middle. I always come back to Cooper, and I think who's the guy that could instantly replace a guy like John Atkins in that chain around his neck in the middle of the Georgia front, soaking up blocks for their inside linebackers to roll downhill. And to me, the most likely guy to do that would be definitely be Robert Cooper.
Yeah, Jeff, it's going to be an interesting time. I was saying this before you joined us here to start the show today that, you know, for the next month, it's going to be 100 miles an hour towards the Rose Bowl and 100 miles an hour towards December 20th in the early signing period, which begins and lasts for 3 days. It's something we haven't really seen in college football before. This is going to be, I would say, dare say, the craziest month ever at Dog Nation. I'm glad to have you as a part of that coverage.
Brandon, we'll be here every day, Dog Nation Daily. Appreciate it.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
And, you know, as an example, we were just saying about Trey Dean a moment ago. Junior Baker in our comment section says, I'll tell you this, if Trey Dean is open to come to Georgia, you take Trey Dean. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, kid's the best cover corner in 2018, and that's a bold statement. And Junior obviously follows the recruiting stuff really well, and it's an example of what a lot of folks say this time of year. You know, the one thing we collectively all agree on is those that are Georgia fans want Georgia to get the best possible class. Where there is going to be some differences in opinion among fans, though, is who are the recruits that make up that class? And part of this is geography. You like guys from your own hometown, or you like guys that you've seen a lot, or you just like the guys that, you know, based on your opinion from what you've watched on the internet. But that's where things are going to get kind of interesting. All the people who care about Georgia football clearly want Georgia to have the best possible class it can get. But in terms of who are those 24, maybe Georgia's case, you know, maybe stuck at 24 in terms of the names for 28. Who are those best 24 names, best 25 names in a lot of years? There's going to be some debate when it comes to that. Thought that Jeff had some really interesting things to say about Tennessee. We'll use that as our transition to our SEC through. Of course, invite you to check us out on AT&T SEC Country Live at 3 p.m. Eastern Time today on the SEC Country Facebook page. Always a lot of fun doing that program. I'll also remind you that Dog Nation Daily today brought to you in part by my friends at Georgia United Credit Union. Make sure you check out their all-new Unified Checking account. An account that gives you the comforts of a free checking account with the options to earn more. It's a simple, convenient, rewarding checking account that fits your lifestyle. Visit GUCU.org for the terms and conditions that apply to this account. Federally insured by the NCUA. All right, Jeff's talking about what a disaster it is at Tennessee right now. Mike Griffith, who joins us a lot on AT&T SEC Country Live, also wrote a pretty provocative piece at SECCountry.com kind of saying the same thing. And what Griffith heard from was an anonymous SEC coach who described how quickly it is that Tennessee needs to make a coaching hire. And he called the situation toxic. And that word has gotten a lot of attention as a lot of Tennessee fans are kind of saying, well, I don't think it's toxic at all right now because Philip Fulmer's the guy who's in charge now and everything has sort of calmed down and everybody believes that Fulmer is on his way to making a pretty good hire for Tennessee. But the one thing that I would suggest that I'm not quite sure Vols fans understand well enough, and based on the way that Tennessee's been behaving, I'm not sure the program understands well enough, is just how much of a sea change this early signing period is going to be. You know, the description that Mike Griffith gives of what Fulmer wants to do going into this coaching search is to be somewhat deliberate. I believe the word that that a source told Griffith was thorough. Folks, there's no time to be thorough. I mean, this thing is happening in a couple weeks, and all the players that you hope to sign are going to sign somewhere else. I mean, you know, 60, 70, 80% of the recruits are going to be gone before Christmas Day. They're going to have signed letters of intent, and Tennessee may be on the risk and the verge of missing out on all of them here. And I think this is a really interesting thing to watch. And I've kind of done side by side Tennessee's coaching search, Florida's coaching search. Y'all know what I think about Florida, but there's no denying that Florida the entire time had an idea of what it had to do to be ready for December 20th, and it seems like Tennessee is just sort of misunderstanding just how far it's going to set its program back, regardless of what coach it hires, if it can't get a signing class started in the month of December. That is a really, really strange situation at Tennessee, and I thought Mike Griffith's piece on that was pretty interesting. Let me keep the recruiting theme going here as well for a moment and transition to Florida, which, according to a Zach Albaverde report at SECCountry.com, if they were to reach out to Emory Jones, the five-star quarterback from Heard County, who's currently an Ohio State commit, and really a lot of people don't think he's going to keep that commitment. He's either going to flip to Alabama, or as he told Zach Albaverde from SEC Country, that even though it's late in the process, he'd consider Florida if Florida would reach out to him. Now, I guess the backstory here is that Dan Mullen was the first coach to offer Emory Jones, going back to his time at Mississippi State. Apparently has not reached out to him, though, since he's been Florida coach. I don't know if you read anything into that or not, but Mullen would obviously like a big-time quarterback prospect. He tried for Justin Fields. He's not getting Justin Fields, but he may have a chance to get Emory Jones if he were to reach out right away. So kind of an interesting report there. We'll have more on that at AT&T SEC Country Live later on this afternoon. By the way, speaking of the quarterback that Florida does have, Matt Corral, there's also a report that Corral is looking to visit Ole Miss this weekend. Now, there's a lot of tea leaves to be read here, a lot of circumstantial evidence. Mullen's first act, high profile as the Florida coach, was to visit one of his commits, Damian Pierce, the running back from Bainbridge, to visit Justin Fields, a bit of a Hail Mary pass, not visiting Matt Corral. It seems to me to believe that there may be a divorce coming at some point in time between Corral and Florida. Maybe Corral realized that, and that's why he's going to Ole Miss. Oh, yeah, by the way, why would Corral go to Ole Miss? Because 24/7 Sports is reporting that Shea Patterson, the currently injured but when healthy very good quarterback for the Rebels, he's looking at transferring. He's going to try to petition to become eligible right away. And schools that you're looking at are these sort of big-name, bold-print schools, a place like Michigan, for instance, to be with Jim Harbaugh, UCLA to be with Chip Kelly. I know that Michigan was heavily involved in the Shea Patterson recruiting before. So this is one to watch just from sort of a national perspective. If Patterson transfers and if the NCAA grants him a waiver, he could become a bit of a kingmaker here and make a college football program that needs a quarterback much, much better very quickly. So interesting stuff there. We'll make that your SEC through. And now you're on Dog Nation Daily. Let me get ready to transition back to the Rose Bowl here for a moment with a couple of subjects, a couple of kind of interesting things involving this game. One that's been out for the last couple of days, and we didn't mention the show yesterday, but I want to talk for a little bit about the on the show right now. I guess there were some Georgia fans who got Baker Mayfield's cell phone number. This happens in college football all the time. It happened to Knowshon Moreno at least once. Happened to Tim Tebow. It seems like it's LSU fans that have done it a bunch. In this case, I guess it was Georgia fans with Baker Mayfield. Do we have the Baker Mayfield tweet? Do we have that? What Mayfield essentially tweeted was, hey, to the Georgia fans who had my phone number, you know, nice job. He says he changed his phone number there after that point. And, you know, so he kind of laughed about it. And he basically sort of laughed the whole thing off. But obviously, you know, this is going to be a reminder for some people of what happened to Mayfield going into the Kansas game, where he felt disrespected by the Kansas defense and then went on to have a big day and also, you know, kind of grabbed himself and kind of made some negative headlines there coming off of that. And, you know, I guess I have two thoughts on this because I've kind of watched the sort of media story unfold on this in the last couple of days. You can't compare the response to Georgia and what its fans may have done to the response to Kansas and what its players may have done. A, because it's the difference between fans and players, but it's also the difference between Kansas and Georgia. And here's what Mayfield did say. If you're listening, I'll read it to you. If you're watching, you can see it. To whoever posted my cell phone number, bravo. I got a change. To the Georgia fans that had the kind words of encouragement, I applaud your creativity. And so some people said, oh, y'all better watch out. Don't make Baker Mayfield mad. But it's important to remember here that there's a big difference between the Kansas defense and the Georgia defense, and that the Georgia defense, I don't think, is quite so worried about giving Baker Mayfield bulletin board material. Not because Mayfield's not a great quarterback. He is. But this is the kind of defense that sort of fed off that kind of thing itself all season long. And Raymond Cox actually had a pretty interesting point about that in the comment section a little earlier in our show on Dog Nation Daily. He called Baker Mayfield kind of a cocky guy. I think he called him a hot dog. I think that was the phrase that he used. And he said he hopes to see Baker Mayfield get sacked 5 times that day by the Georgia defense. And I do believe that's true. Mayfield is such a contrast from the typical personality of the average Georgia defender, who is about no-nonsense and about – I mean, remember, this group felt slighted by Notre Dame for, like, no reason. I mean, just because the national media was excited about covering this game in South Bend, all of a sudden the Georgia defense seemingly took that as a slight and had, like, some extra chip on its shoulder all week long, at least it seemed, based on what we read and based on the way they kind of carried themselves leading to that week. My guess is it's not – Baker Mayfield, who's going to be angered by Georgia before you get to January 1st? If I had to guess, my guess is it's going to be something that Baker Mayfield says or does, or something the Georgia defense is reminded of that makes them angry at Baker Mayfield. I believe there could be, strangely, even though these two programs really don't know much about each other and haven't been on the same field before, there could strangely be a little bit of bad blood between these two teams by the time you get to January 1st. And I thought that Mike Johnson on AT&T SEC Country Live had a really interesting point yesterday, which was in the bowl games that he played in Alabama, he played in some big ones, including a Rose Bowl. He said you'd be surprised how much bad blood you do end up having on the field together during bowl games because the two teams are sort of near each other all week long. They see each other at shopping malls. They see each other, you know, around town, you know, a lot of sort of combined events leading up to the game. And he says that has a way of sort of creating a little bit of bad blood from time to time. So there's not a whole lot to connect Georgia and Oklahoma yet. Not a lot of storylines between these two teams as of yet. But you may get a couple before you get close to game day. I think that'll be kind of an interesting thing to watch. Oh, yeah, one more thing to discuss here. Rodney Anderson, the leading rusher for Oklahoma running back, has a protective order out against him. I won't pretend to understand all the legal ramifications of that. He does have a court hearing coming on this later on in the month of December. This obviously, I guess, related to some sort of domestic disturbance allegation here. So we'll have to follow this and see how it goes. I won't pretend to know what this might have in terms of an impact for Anderson, but obviously Oklahoma has a backstory of this when it comes to the Joe Mixon stuff, so there will be some sensitivity to this issue. As we wrap up the show, I will tell you we'll continue to talk a lot about the Rose Bowl in the days ahead here on Dog Nation Daily. It's going to be a really, really fun time. And as news comes out of Oklahoma, we'll cover it, and we'll obviously pay attention to it here on the Georgia side of things as well. Really, really cool to think, and I know that a lot of you are making your own travel plans right now, cool to think that Georgia's on its way to Pasadena to be a part of a once-in-a-lifetime bowl trip with tens upon tens of thousands of other Georgia fans with a shot at a national championship game back in your own state in the city of Atlanta if you can get the win against the Sooners. That's kind of a cool thing to think about. As we wrap up, though, let me also remind you, 326 days from right now, Georgia heads to another cool spot, Jacksonville, Florida, for the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, and maybe as reigning national champions. Georgia could go in for the first time with Dan Mullen as the coach of the Florida Gators and get another win against Florida. We think it's a game that still matters regardless of the situation involving the two teams. It's our Gator Hater Countdown. We do it every day on Dog Nation Daily, and we'll see you tomorrow.